Imagine submitting your resume for a job opening and having a chatbot review your credentials with you. You land the job and things seem to be going pretty well until performance review time. Though you haven't necessarily been aware of it, an AI-powered system has been tracking and analyzing your performance throughout the year, considering your project involvement as well as any feedback from your colleagues. Another AI platform has been analyzing your skills and career ambitions and recommending training courses, webinars, and workshops. Helpful, right? Of course, there's that nagging feeling that every keystroke in email is being monitored, which is maybe not so helpful. There will be a little bit of everything in the AI-powered workplace of tomorrow, and the next few years will largely determine just how useful or how intrusive it will be. Will rote HR functions be automated, freeing managers for more high-impact work? Will employees have the power to manage their employment journey? Or will AI be used for control and surveillance? Welcome to this episode of AI Reality Check. I'm your host, Meredith Dalt, a journalist and media producer at Smith School of Business, and today we're talking about AI-powered human resources. We're in very capable hands with our two guests, both of whom are Smith alumni. Heidi Klotz is Vice President Total Rewards at AtkinsRéalis, formerly SNC-Lavalin. Heidi also earned her Master of Management Analytics at Smith School of Business. Dagmar Christensen is the Head of Workplace Transformation at Profinda, an AI skills matching tool helping clients to align their business demand and strategy with their employees' skills and aspirations. Dagmar holds an MBA from Smith. Welcome, Heidi and Dagmar. So Dagmar, let's start with you. I know you're helping a lot of organizations to introduce AI-related technology to their talent management processes and to tap into the ton of data that HR generates. In broad strokes, how far along are we at this point? And how is AI being used?
Even though it feels like we've been hearing about AI in HR and in the HR hype cycle for years, I think we're actually relatively early in the curve for AI applications in HR. This depends on, you know, the organization, its leadership, the type of AI. But I think if you look at, you know, the Gartner hype cycle as an example, they put HR AI applications around the 5 to 10 year mark before they reach what they call, you know, the plateau of productivity. So I think HR leaders are exploring, they're experimenting, they're understanding the use cases, but many aren't ready to, you know, dive headfirst into a big financial investment as of yet. I think if we use self-driving cars as, you know, the analogy of where we're at with AI tech applications in the HR world, we are very much still building the sensors for this car. It's going to take a lot of work, a lot of time to get us in a place where, you know, we can take our hands safely off the wheel. The HR area that I think AI has already permeated quite well is talent acquisition and recruitment. So many tools. I'm sure many listeners have had some firsthand experience with at this point, either on the candidate side or on the HR manager side. You know, video interviewing, AI-enabled candidate matching. So at Profinda, where I work, we're using AI to help match people to work internally within the company. So we take into account skills, preferences, experience, accreditations, availability to drive users to make more objective, data-driven staffing decisions. So I actually heard a great stat from one of our big four clients the other day. Their most recent exit surveys, about 75% of leavers cited lack of choice or visibility of projects as their primary reason for changing companies. So we think about AI as augmenting a human manager who isn't able to gather and remember and analyze even a fraction of what the machine can, especially, you know, all the variables for best fit project assignment. AI skills matching and tailored career recommendations quickly become a differentiator for your employee value proposition and your retention strategy. Otherwise, you know, they can't be achieved at all without AI tech. So to come, you know, full circle on this question, the technology itself, innovating at pace, and fair to say, HR leaders are, you know, tuned in and paying attention, but full-scale adoption of AI is a bit more sluggish. Many, dare I say most, of these tools sit unused and I think unadopted. This is mostly because people are resistant to change, even if that means giving up some of the really automatable admin that they're already complaining about in their existing job. So it's a frictionful process, one that needs to have really strong executive sponsorship, whole function buy-in, and ongoing change management investment in order to drive real business impact via the adoption of AI apps.
Right. And Heidi, how does this match up with your experience at Atkins Realis?
Yeah, that's a really great observation, and really something that I've seen, and I've seen in several organizations that I've worked in. So, you know, being more on the practitioner side of HR, there is definitely an interest and a push, especially from leadership. So exactly like you were saying, Dagmar, you know, there is a lot of executive buy-in. There's a lot of interest in moving things forward, but the adoption and the, I guess, skills even from the people within the HR function are really just at their infancy. So for me, I see that as a really great opportunity. And that's one of the reasons that I decided to go and do my MMA at Smith, was I really wanted to be able to work in that space and be one of the resources, one of the people that could champion, but also understand what exactly AI and analytics could bring to the HR function. There's just so much opportunity. There are a lot of tools that are available. I've worked for an organization that was a people analytics cloud platform, and the overwhelming challenge was adoption and, again, change management and really removing the fear that AI is going to take our jobs and replace the people in our teams. There's that real fear. So, you know, a large organization like ours at Atkins Realis, we're 37,000 employees across the world, and we're really just at the beginning of our HR people analytics journey. We have started with dashboards in the past year, and that's, you know, we're 2023, and that's how we've decided to kick things off. But we are looking now at partnering with different organizations, consultants, to see how we can take things to the next level.
Right. And how, like in your day-to-day, where's AI coming into play in your role now? Like some specific examples?
Yeah, I mean, from a total rewards perspective, so total rewards is all about compensation, benefits, retirement programs. You know, we're being asked to make more intelligent decisions, or help the business actually make more intelligent decisions. So things like understanding our population, things like how are we going to reward our people smarter based on the projects that they're working on? And also, since we have historically been the people in the organization who have that more analytical mindset, our HR colleagues within the HR employee relations or change management, learning and development are really looking at us as the, you know, data custodians, or the people who are the ones who understand what the data is that we have in our systems, to help them, you know, leverage and make better decisions and implement better programs. So, you know, AI, like Dagmar said, I think it's really kicked off more in the talent acquisition space. And we're still really looking at how we can bring that into our space and really help HR help the decision make better, you know, decisions about how we're going to attract, retain, and motivate our teams.
Got it. Thank you. And Dagmar, you alluded to this earlier, but can we sort of dig in a little bit about what generative AI in particular has to offer when it comes to recruiting and onboarding, as well as growing as those opportunities, as you mentioned, about aligning employees with the right projects and finding opportunities for them?
Yeah, sure. So Gen AI is probably one of the buzziest technology terms around right now. So I suppose just to start off, for those who don't know, Gen AI is like intelligent Google on steroids. You know, you can ask it to summarize information, or, you know, write me a poem, or answer a complicated question, generate an image in a certain style, which we've been seeing a lot of. Fair to say that most HR leaders are actively exploring potential use cases and opportunities when it comes to Gen AI. I think exploring is the key word here, because many people are willing to play around with Gen AI technology, but for them to overcome the mental barriers and, you know, use it on a daily basis, it's a huge culture shift. I think Gen AI is definitely starting to proliferate in the natural language processing space. Think virtual assistants, chatbots, unstructured data processing, all very commonly used HR tools, continuing to gain popularity, but now in a much more meaningful way than before, due to Gen AI technology advancement. They weren't very good before, as anyone who's interacted with a customer service chatbot can attest to. I know lots of us have probably had a little play around with ChatGPT. I know many people who've begun to use that in all sorts of professional capacities already. But the challenge is that there's really limited consistency or any type of standardization right now in how it's being used or the guidelines around its use. Success with Gen AI, in my view, will require equal parts training and technology. So in order to get the adoption of Gen AI at scale in your business, it really needs to be embedded into the workflow and the tooling.
Right. And I actually think that one issue, and we've heard this a lot in the podcast so far, is that people are not sure they can trust the results with some of the Gen AI stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's really important to find a practical application that you can then test and evaluate and get to that level of comfort. You know, one that comes to mind is job descriptions. There's so much bias existing in language already. Very few people are able to accurately describe the skills needed for the role. They're really long and tedious to write. Anyone who's been in like that hiring manager or HR position is nodding their heads emphatically as I say this. It's a really good use case for Gen AI. And I think a nice way to start learning how to write prompts is to focus on a task like generating better JDs, or just kind of picking, you know, one small area that can start to get you comfortable. So if you have a talent acquisition or a resourcing tool in your org or on your radar that has this built into the workflow, as I was saying, right, for defining job requirements, it's a great way to start familiarizing yourself with Gen AI and a helpful time saver. And it's something that we've been working on in our product and something we've recently integrated, because we've been getting feedback for years that no one bothers to write a description. It often just sits empty, which is extremely unhelpful for the person, you know, trying to fill that role. And to your point, if the options are it sits empty, or maybe I, you know, have to spend a little bit of time on it because I have to do a little bit more tailoring because what was spit out by ChatGPT is not perfect, it feels like an okay compromise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see. That makes sense. I mean, it doesn't seem surprising to me that we've been using AI to some degree, because I feel like robots have been sifting through CVs now for some time. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just sort of a natural development, I suppose.
Definitely.
Okay. And so, and actually with that in mind, and you touched on it, Dagmar, but Heidi, I know diversity is an issue that's on your mind often. And one thing we've heard over and over again is, and you mentioned bias, Dagmar, but the bias is being built in to AI just by human bias being recreated and reproduced. Do you think AI enabled systems or platforms can help advance the DEI agenda, or do you think they're going to work against it?
Well, I think with anything related to AI and, you know, the analytics space, it's really important to use that as a guidepost, but not as your final and your be all end all. So I really love the fact that with all the data that we have sitting in HR, the structured data, unstructured data, we can go beyond just looking at the number of men and women, visible minorities. We can really go and look at, you know, the individuals who are working for our organization, what's important to them, what is keeping them in the organization, what's keeping them motivated, why are they leaving? And then look at if there are any trends related to specific demographics. That's where I think we have the value add. And I think that's where it's going to really open the door and help us understand more about how we can make some headway in the diversity space. You know, like anything with AI, it's, we have to be mindful of bias. We have to be, you know, there's always going to be a human component that's needed with AI, with the robots, with the machines, right? To validate the information. And that's a lot of the education that I've been sharing with my team, you know, based on my experience. What I learned during my MMA was it's really important to question. It's really important to understand what the algorithms are doing so that you can really make better decisions, but also question what the information is that's being given to you. And that's, I think, you know, going back to what Dagmar was saying about like job descriptions and using generative AI, we have to make sure that people understand what the results are that are being given to them and have them be able to question it. And it's really there to either support or debunk any hypothesis that we already have. So in, you know, the diversity space, it's still a really hot topic. I think, you know, it's sort of falling out of the top priorities maybe in the past year or so, but it's still something where we have and we can make a big impact. It's just a matter of educating people and having the right skill sets and the teams to be able to leverage the information we have.
Right. I mean, we've all heard about the, I think we most of us have heard about the situation at Amazon where it was screening out female,
yeah.
The bots were screening out female candidates because they had different backgrounds. Didn't mean they weren't qualified for the jobs, but they hadn't followed the criteria or the pathways that maybe some of the male candidates had. So they seemed unqualified. How do you deal with that kind of thing?
I mean, you know, again, you have to really understand and look at what the algorithms are doing. And I think it's really going to be a challenge because we can't just 100% rely on AI right now, because at the end of the day, it's still humans who are programming it. Or, you know, AI can sometimes look at past trends to forecast the future, but maybe that's not the right answer, right? It's really looking at what we're trying to do, what we're trying to change. You know, in our organization, we're really looking at increasing the number of females in our engineering fields, which are typically male dominated. So how, you know, just looking at historical data within our organization is not going to be enough. We really need to think outside the box and, you know, try to understand, well, maybe why are there not more women graduating from engineering programs, and what can we do to influence that? It's really taking it to the next level and taking it to the next step and not just relying on the past historical data that we have.
Right. So I guess awareness is the most important first step.
Big time, big time. And that's something I actually encourage a lot of the people on my team who haven't had the exposure to AI or really, you know, more in-depth knowledge, is to just start asking questions, start educating yourselves. There's so many webinars now in this space to help understand and explain. And I really encourage everyone to just start being more curious and asking more questions.
Okay, that makes sense. There was an article in an academic journal recently that spoke about a new type of AI augmented leadership that's emerging, and it's complete with leader support dashboards, which you mentioned, that reveal patterns drawn from employee surveys and electronic communications, along with algorithms guiding leaders on potential problem areas, like which team members might need more attention. The article speculated that in the future, AI will not only support, but substitute human leadership in some areas. What do either of you think about this kind of futuristic view?
Yeah, I'm happy to take this first. So I think managers spending less time manipulating an Excel sheet or BI dashboard to pull out people analytics insight equals more time to spend proactively managing relationships or development experiences or wellness. So there's no doubting augmentation via AI has value. And I think, you know, Heidi was just speaking to this very well. As I think you're thinking about AI in a way that means that you're having additional hours in your day to put towards innovation, innovative thinking, not just, you know, perpetuating what you used to do because you had to, is a really great way to think about it. We've all had experiences with bad managers, and making the talent management experience more data-driven can only be a good thing. I see these more as nudges within a workflow or kind of data at point of decision for the manager to ultimately take the wheel and have those human conversations. Think of a future in which you can identify a flight risk within your team and be provided with a tailored list of interventions. The human's still the one having those empathetic conversations, but the technology can help them understand where to target their energy and time. And I think advanced pattern recognition and intelligent nudges, as per this article, are the obvious evolution of AI for HR, with one caveat: no one should be implementing AI tooling that is substitute decision maker, period. The human always needs to be able to take the wheel. I'm highly skeptical generally that this would ever fly from a compliance perspective and standpoint as well, with the introduction of legislation like the EU AI Act. More roadblocks are going to come up against AI as a replacement versus an augmentation of humans.
I'm happy to hear that. But what you're suggesting is a leader gets a notice that, hey, Maria is not thriving. Maybe a human intervention is required to find out what's going on with
her before she leaves, and that costs our company money as we have to replace her. Is that the idea?
Exactly. So Maria has been passed up for similar opportunities X times in the past 6 months, and it's worth now having a conversation with her to see if she's thriving and see where you can intervene and et cetera.
Right. Okay. So that's something that could easily get missed in a busy work life.
Every day.
Got it. Okay. Heidi, you earned a Master of Management Analytics at Smith, as you've mentioned, which is kind of an unusual thing for an HR leader. And you've written about the possibilities for natural language processing for Smith Business Insight in the past, as I mentioned in the introduction. Do you see this skill set involving analytics and AI as essential for your people management colleagues going forward?
I think it's absolutely going to be more essential. It's again, from the understanding perspective, and that's really what I loved about the MMA program, was you could take what you want out of that program. You could go full on technical, you could go full on business. But really the goal of the MMA program was to sort of be that translator between the data side, the very technical side, and the business side. And the more that I'm speaking with people in the organization, the more I'm realizing how critical that translator role is, because there is a huge gap between the business and what the business needs and wants versus the technical people, the data scientists, the analysts, and really being able to bridge that gap to make the business case and sell things moving forward. Even things like we were saying before about, you know, putting together a new tool or a new system that's going to help screen CVs, or generative AI that's going to write job descriptions. The data scientist can build that and, you know, come up with this great tool. And the business says, this sounds great, but what does this actually mean at the end of the day? And how do we use that? So I think the more that HR is moving into the analytics AI space, the more we're going to need people who really understand what that means and how we can apply that to the work that we're doing to support our colleagues within our organizations. So that's one of the things that really drove me to do the program.
I wanted to ask, has it made it easier for you to champion AI within your organization, given that you have this skill set?
100%. I mean, I have the credibility now. I was just on a call this morning where we were partnering with a university to bring students in to do some consulting project for an HR initiative. And although people analytics is not, you know, part of my scope of role, it's something that people look to me to provide insight and guidance and to make sure that we're on the right path. So it really gave me a step above some of my other HR colleagues. And I just like being involved in those projects. And that's what I think is really nice about the people analytics space. A lot of people we just want to learn together. We just want to help grow this together. And we're all willing to collaborate. So being part of that network, or being part of this evolving and really exciting field, I think is just a great experience. And the MMA degree really gave me the ability to do that.
Right. That makes sense. But it doesn't mean you're spending all your time convincing people that robots are not coming for their jobs, right? Because I know that, you know, we laugh about it, but there are people legitimately sort of anxious about needing to arm themselves with skills to protect themselves for their future employment. What sorts of conversations do you think actually need to be happening in offices and on shop floors to address people's concerns around their future employability?
I think it's, again, it goes back to education and awareness, and really making sure that people understand that while all these great tools are coming in place, it's not going to replace the human connection and the human decision-making, at least not in maybe my lifetime. Maybe, you know, in 50 years, things could be very different. But, you know, even going back to the point of having AI support leaders and leadership within an organization, and it's great to know that, you know, based on certain criteria, you may have an employee that is a flight risk and you want to spend time with them. But what about the other employees on your team? They need just as much reassurance and support and empathetic conversations. And the algorithm can't really pinpoint that. I think we have to really still ensure that we're, you know, building relationships with the people on our team, supporting them and trusting our intuition. And AI, I haven't seen, you know, it hasn't been to that level of sophistication just yet. So I think that's going to be something that we can continue to reassure people with.
I'd love to build on that question actually briefly. So a couple of things. So I wrote an article a few years ago in Smith Insights actually on calling, quelling it. Yes, quelling AI anxiety for employees.
Show notes, everybody.
And I think, you know, the basic strategic change management 101 principles apply. So I won't spend time, you know, talking that through. But anecdotally, what I've found is the most effective is building excitement through the what's in it for me. I work with firms that are, you know, trying to shift into skills-based organizations. And it's not really until we explain to employees that they'll be able to use the tool. You know, they'll be able to see options for what they can work on next, or what upskilling it takes to get there, or where their skills are transferable and what career doors this opens up in other areas of the company. That's when we really get them logging in. And that can be a really challenging message to communicate and kind of, you know, bring to life. I think people also struggle with conceptualizing role evolution. Almost everyone's role is going to change. I spend a lot of time talking through with clients what this role evolution could look like with assisted with AI tooling. And this is something that I don't think gets enough airtime. So you're really missing out on value if you are thinking only in terms of automation equals saved hours equals headcount reduction, which is the business case I see most commonly by far. So for example, I will save 10,000 hours manually or annually rather via AI automation versus my previous manual process. Thus, I can realize 20 redundancies. This kind of single dimensionality is one of the reasons employees have fear around AI. Mm-hmm. It's a missed opportunity to elevate your back and middle office. Could be focusing on enhancing those distinctly human and relational skills they could be practicing. And a little bit of creative thinking is needed here, or you'll be leaving money on the table.
So if people do want to think more positively and want to start to act proactively now, so you're saying they should be. What advice do you want to offer people? Like, what should people be doing now to proactively prepare for this AI future?
Heidi touched on this earlier, but to employees, I think, ask questions. In its purest intention, AI for HR should be accomplishing the goal of making work better for humans, humans better at work. I'd encourage employees to get more involved in the ownership of their own data. So, you know, understand how it's being used. Nerd out a little bit, trying to wrap your head around machine learning. So I know Heidi was touching on webinars. You know, if your company offers a beginner course on AI, give it a try. Knowledge is power. Explore the plethora of free resources on, you know, YouTube, Coursera, whatever other learning catalog of your choosing. For HR leaders, my advice to those who are maybe feeling a little bit overwhelmed with where to start their AI transformations is that now is the time to go through the data cleanup and data transformation work you've been putting off. AI is it's not a magic wand, but those who are most prepared will see the most value in 5 years. So you can try choosing one or two high impact use cases, running a proof of concept or a pilot with a couple of vendors. So in my view, this should be the blue sky thinking version, where you're testing a workforce transformation hypothesis that maybe feels a little radical for you. And, you know, you're really de-risking and maximizing your initial investment by testing the waters before you give it that, you know, green light to scale. So, you know, as an example, you could try piloting an opportunity marketplace to drive your mobility and retention strategy only between two specific business areas with transferable skills. So you don't have to launch this to your entire company, but you can test it out in a focused area at low risk and controlled cost.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And did you want to weigh in, Heidi, a few final thoughts?
I mean, I agree with everything that Dagmar said. And, my advice would just be embrace it. This is not going away anytime soon. And like she said, see the value in it and see how you can make a difference or how you can bring that into the way that you work. It's just going to make things easier, hopefully. And Yeah, to me, it's just something that's really exciting. And I really try to share my passion for people analytics and what we can do with AI and HR with others, and hopefully demystify a little bit about what it can do for us.
So in short, you both sound really positive and excited. So we should do, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
That's great. Let's leave it there. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been great talking with you.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
And that's the show. I want to thank podcast writer and lead researcher Alan Morantz, my colleague Julia Lefebvre for her behind-the-scenes support, and Bill Cassidy for editing support. If you're looking for more insights for business leaders on AI and many other topics, check out Smith Business Insight at smithqueens.com/insight. Thanks for listening.